going to generate a false memory that high every time I measure. Another possible content measure is the habituation. I think somebody raised the issue of bias effect, habituation of the response to the stimulus. What can you speak to whether that's what the literature says about it?
Well, I mean, you could certainly see that it's very circumscribed visually impaired. So there is certainly the potential for habituation. But what is wrong with habituation? This kind of bad.
You don't know on any of the kinds of studies you would describe, you haven't looked at long term training effects.
Have not.
Very interesting. I see something that's not against the letter of the rule, which I know very clearly is a gross violation of the spirit of the rule. How would I distinguish that in my brain? Would that close it through into some sort of
I'm just gonna pull a brain science.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Logistics issue, and we're trying
try to sort it out in the next couple of weeks, because we have to book something, especially if we're going to have lots of guests. So if it turns out that, many of the invitees will in fact be from this area, we may revert to Washington in July. That's a bit. That was just in the way of that question. So, George.
My name is George Mashke, and I'm one of the original organizers of antipolygraph.org. We're a network of individuals who are dedicated to changing America's polygraph policy. What we're seeking specifically is for a comprehensive polygraph protection act that would eliminate all of the exemptions of the 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act, which would essentially outlaw polygraph screening within the federal government, within state governments, and local governments nationwide. Those of us who are associated in this effort are for the most part victims of the polygraph, people who came in and told the truth and were branded liars, and in most cases have suffered serious life consequences as a result of that erroneous determination. In my own case, I applied to become a special agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation in 1995. And during my pre-employment polygraph, I was accused of having disclosed classified information to unauthorized persons, of having had contacts with foreign intelligence agencies, and I've recently learned also of abusing drugs. I've never done any of these things, and yet I was accused of lying, and there's no appeal process in the Federal Bureau of Investigation for applicants for employment. So I was dropped like a hot potato. And not only that, but the slanderous information that resulted from that polygraph examination was entered into government records and reported to the Army. I'm a captain in the Army Reserve, and have recently had my security clearance revoked, I believe in large measure based on the information reported by the FBI. This will, in all likelihood, end my career with the Army Reserve very soon, unless I can successfully appeal that decision. So that's my personal interest in it. Others have their own stories. Gino Scalabrini introduced himself earlier. He's another original founder of the organization. And there are others named and others who prefer to remain anonymous associated with our effort. The main clearinghouse for information that we've established is an antipolygraph.org website, which, whether you agree with what we present or not, you should be aware of, because it's information that's out there and that people who are subject to polygraph screening are seeing. Key among the information that we've put out is a book called The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, which we distribute for free. It's an Adobe Acrobat PDF form. I have a printout here, which I'll be happy to provide the committee. You can make copies or download it yourself and make copies. But what we've set out to do here is to review the scientific evidence on polygraph ourselves. We did our own review and present our results for conclusion. And I certainly wouldn't ask you to accept on our word our conclusions, but you might review the sources that we cited in Chapter 1, review them yourselves, and draw your own conclusions. In the second chapter, we provided a discussion of federal polygraph policy, in particular with regard to the counter-espionage issue, and in particular in the post-Ames era, and there's information there that I think you will find useful and as a guide for areas for further inquiry for the committee. Chapter 3, we describe the polygraph process in great detail. We expose the deceptions that are inherent in the procedure and upon which it relies. We don't want other people going through the same experience that we were. When I found out, for example, that in a polygraph interrogation, the subject must be lied to and deceived by the polygrapher, I was outraged, and it's a sense of righteous indignation over that deception that's being practiced against law-abiding American citizens by their own government that drives us on in this effort. Now, this element of deception may or may not be a factor for you to consider in evaluating the scientific evidence on polygraph, but I read that you've also been asked to provide a policy recommendation on whether the government should continue to use the polygraph. And it's important that you realize how employees with top secret clearances or who are being in the process of obtaining one will feel, what they will think when they learn that they've been lied to by the government, that in a sense they were defrauded. Now, we explain those deceptions. I won't go into detail. I think most of you probably know about them by now. But in our next chapter, we explain how anyone can be the polygraph test. And this is also important for you to be aware of, that this information is on the internet, available for free. And in the 6 months that we've been online, it's been downloaded something on the order of 10,000 times. And we're hoping that it'll be read by a lot more people, because we want truthful people like us to be able to protect themselves against the false positive outcome. So that's something that you need to be aware of. I've also got some questions that I've come up with in my review of the evidence on polygraph that I think you, as a committee, ought necessarily to address before you draft your report. The most fundamental question is this: is controlled question test polygraphy sufficiently standardized that a meaningful validity rate can be determined? The question as to whether these tests are tests at all is fundamental to your inquiry. What effect might an examinee's knowledge and understanding of the procedure have on the polygraph process? The polygraph process involves numerous deceptions on the part of the polygraph examiner. For example, during the stimulation or acquaintance test, the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute terms it, the examinee is led to believe that he or she showed a physiological response when lying about the number he or she chose. Whether or not such is the case, the polygraph examiner exaggerates the accuracy of the procedure in describing it to the subject. And the most important deception, which I alluded to earlier, is that the rationale provided to the examinee for the control question is a lie. Questions that you should consider are these: how have studies purporting to establish the validity of polygraphy controlled for the variable of the examinee's level of knowledge about the procedure? Can valid results be expected from subjects who understand the deceptions on which the procedure relies? And a policy question for you to consider, since you've been asked to comment on polygraph policy, is: how should polygraph examiners handle informed subjects? The president of the American Polygraph Association, Skip Webb, declined to answer this question when I put it to him in an email. We had an exchange on this, which you might find of interest to review. You'll find it on the antipolygraph.org website on our reading room page. Another question for you to consider is the effect of countermeasures on of American culture that somehow you have to be a psychotic or believe your own lies in order to defeat a polygraph test. Nonsense. Read chapter 4 of The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, and you'll find out how to augment your responses to the control question and beat the bot. At the committee's meeting in January, Dr. Andrew Ryan, who I believe is here today, he claimed that the way we currently score the physiological data, countermeasures attempts tend to result in an outcome of no opinion, rather than allowing deceptive persons to pass the test. You should ask, what research supports this conclusion? On the subject of countermeasures, I had the pleasure of attending the Senate Committee on the Judiciary's meeting for hearing the day before yesterday on issues surrounding the use of polygraphs. Now, at that meeting, retired FBI polygrapher Richard W. Pfeiffer, who is also a past president of the American Polygraph Association, stated that information about countermeasures, that is how polygraph examiners can detect countermeasures attempts, must remain classified to be effective. If that's the case and these countermeasures are classified, then each and every one of you on the committee needs to get a security clearance so you can review those. For the polygraph, federal polygraph community to claim that there are countermeasures techniques just work, but we can't tell you why, is not acceptable. As policy considerations are also involved, and I know Professor Feigman, you have got a legal opinion or legal counsel for this work too. You should consider this. Dr. Ryan likens polygraph security screening to a stress test to screen for heart problems. If we are to compare polygraphy to a medical procedure, then can a subject be considered to have given informed consent to submit to a polygraph test when he or she is deliberately misled about the nature of the procedure? How do those people who are subject to polygraph screening react when they discover that they have been lied to about the nature of the procedure? Another question. Are the polygraph procedures defined by the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute consistent with what is happening in the field? I suggest that you compare the false positive rates obtained by the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute in its validation study of the tests for espionage and sabotage, which are available. You'll find them on antipolygraph.org. Compare those false positive rates with the false positive rates that are being reported by the Departments of Defense and Energy in the field. The former, the false positive rates obtained in laboratory tests at the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute are considerably higher than those that are being reported in the field. You should examine what accounts for these discrepancies. Let me give you an example. The Department of Defense Polygraph Program Report for fiscal year 2000 reports that, excluding the National Security Administration and the National Reconnaissance Organization, whose polygraph figures are classified, the Department of Defense administered 7,890 screening tests. Of those, 202 failed. That provides a positive rate, not false positive rate, but a positive rate of 2.56%. In three validation studies of the test for espionage and sabotage conducted by Dr. Sheila D. Reed, formerly of the Polygraph Institute, an average rate of, I believe, 9.6 or 9.7 we can assume that, I think safely, that not all 202 DOD employees who tested positive were spies or saboteurs, or necessarily had committed security breaches responsive to the questions they were asked. Many of these are false positives. Now, here's what I found most remarkable about what the Department of Defense reported to Congress in fiscal year 2000, is that all 202 persons who failed the Department of Defense polygraph screening test happened to be ones who made admissions that their polygraphers deemed to be substantive. And everyone who made no such admission passed. And this suggests to me, and I suggest that you research and see if you reach the same conclusion, that the only countermeasure needed to pass the Department of Defense polygraph through the Department of Defense polygraph screening test is to make no admission. Don't tell them nothing, and you'll get a pass ultimately. Now, you might get some interrogation about your responses to questions, but what I see from the figures reported to Congress is, unless the Department of Defense lied to Congress, then everyone who didn't admit anything that was considered substantive passed. I find this remarkable. Maybe you will too. Now, at January's meeting, the Department of Energy program, polygraph program chief, David M. Renselman, said that with regard to the polygraph testing of Dr. Wen-Ho Lee, that a quality control review program established in 1999 established that Dr. Lee's polygraph test was not finished. In my review of the literature on polygraphs, I have found no definition in the science of, at all, of what constitutes an unfinished polygraph test. The committee should seek the definition of the method used by quality control review in determining whether a polygraph test is not finished. As a side note, something that I found curious that might be an interesting area of inquiry for the committee is this, that the DOE Quality Control Review Program was established, as, according to David Renselman, in January 1999. The timing is peculiar because Wen-Ho Lee's Department of Energy polygraph test, which he reported in passed, was administered on 23 December 1998. So this quality control review program was established within a month of the main subject in the FBI's investigation of suspected Chinese espionage passing the polygraph. And then quality control review determined that Wen-Ho Lee's test was not finished. An interesting study, perhaps the Department of Energy might accommodate the committee in comparing Dr. Wen-Ho Lee's charts with those of other Department of Energy employees to see whether an objective, by any objective criteria, Dr. Wen-Ho Lee's test could be considered not finished compared with others who were deemed to have finished the test in the Department of Energy. Another question that you should consider is this. At January's meeting, Mr. Renselman also said that the polygraph is not a lie detector. He explained that the polygraph is used to determine if a question bothers the examinee. He said, and I quote, "Polygraph is only a means of looking at the emotion that is taking place at the time a person listens to, thinks about, answers a question that the examiner and the person taking the test has agreed upon originally. And if the answer to that question bothers the person taking the test, then it tends to bother us. And then it's our job to find out, why did that bother you? You should ask, I think, does a reaction to a relevant question necessarily indicates that it is the answer to the question that bothers a person, and not, for example, the mere fact of being asked the question in the first place. What scientific methodology do Department of Energy and presumably other polygraphers use to find out why a question bothered a person? And what scientific research supports the validity of that procedure? Federal polygraph examiners have taken to calling themselves forensic psychophysiologists. After completing a 14-week course in polygraphy at the Department of Defense Polygraph Institute, can polygraph examiners be qualified as psychophysiologists in a general sense, such that they might further be qualified as specialists in the forensic application of that discipline? If so, then why would anyone need to go to the university to get a doctorate in psychophysiology when you can go to Dodd-Pi for 14 weeks and not only become a generalist, but also a specialist in forensic psychophysiology? And another concern that I have that I would like to mention to you is this. At the last meeting, General John A. Borden, who's the administrator of the National Nuclear Security Administration, addressed the committee, and he mentioned, of course, that there's a lot of emotion surrounding the issue of polygraph screening, and I think that can't be avoided. And he asked that you, however, provide an objective, cold, scientific analysis. And I agree, that's your job, that's what you have to do. What bothered me is that in the next breath, General Gordon said, "This is not designed to be an attack. It can't be designed to be seen to be an attack on the polygraph program. I need a polygraph program, I think, that will exist." Well, I'm a little bit concerned about undue influence here. I'm not suggesting that General Gordon deliberately tried to pressure you as to what conclusion you should reach. However, it seems to me, based on my review of the scientific evidence on polygraphs, that you might conclude that polygraphy is not science at all, and that it's more like phrenology. If you reach such a conclusion, and if General Gordon still thinks that he needs a polygraph program and wants to continue it anyway, well, that's his call and he'll be answerable for it. But my concern is that you as a committee not come under any political pressure on what recommendations you might make about whether polygraph screening is scientifically valid and should continue. And a final consideration, there was some talk earlier about FACA, the Federal Advisory Committee Act, I think. This is the law that governs your recording. And as I read through the act, I saw that it provides for the possibility that your report could not, there's a possibility that it would not be made public, that the government might decide that elements of it would not be releasable under the Freedom of Information Act, and that the conclusions that you reach would therefore be withheld from the public. I think that would be a very regrettable development, because to my knowledge, no such review as you're undertaking has ever been done. And if there's to be truly informed public debate on polygraph policy, then the public needs to know whether polygraph tests work or not. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer questions from anyone in the room.
Can I straighten up the back up?
Yeah.
The
we operate under a special exception to the fact that we used to have a complete exception to it, which allowed us to have close deliberations so that we could speak frankly with one another. We're not being afraid to say things when the audience might react to. We did 2 years ago adopt a half a piece of legislation passed that still allows us to have that deliberation. But whenever we have a quorum of the panel together and we have representatives who are from outside the academy community, meaning not a panel member or a staff member or a paid consultant, it has to be advertised on a website and made on the public. However, none of this has changed the fact that the academy, when they take on a study, demands the right and has never been told that they cannot publish their reports. We have an independent press, and we put it through an independent peer review of our device, which is publicly described. And when we release it to the public, virtually simultaneously to giving it to the sponsor. The sponsor in this case is the Department of Energy. Out of courtesy, we always have to sponsor 24 or 48 hours with our final documents so that they can be prepared for the press on the slot. But I've never seen, ever seen one stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Clarification on that, though. There are some people on the panel who either have or are applying for security clearances to investigate matters pertaining to climate measures which are classified. We would not be able to make any conclusions that we drew on the basis of classified information that were themselves classified, we would not be able to make public.
You would have to carefully review what was put in the public document to make the classification.
That's right.
This is the case that people who have security clearance on the committee will, in fact, be able to see classified information about climate measures, or is there an additional need for no kind of thing that
Let me clarify where this is at, because this is again in the spirit of what Andy was saying. We have gone through the committee. Several people do already have differing levels of clearance, and others are in the process of applying for clearance. And we have been told that this would be expedited so that we might have access to things. Until we ask, we don't know what we'll have access to. And whether or not we will be given a response that we can't have access to. This is not the first time that the Academy and its committees have gone through this process, and past experience, I think, suggests that it's still possible to review material and make conclusions and report on having done that without violating the terms of the access. And so I think our expectation of doing this is that would be reflected in the report. We would try to share enough information with the entire committee. If the entire committee does not have that access, in a way that would allow us to reach appropriate conclusions. Until we try to get material and either get it or denied access, I can't answer anything more. But we're going to be pursuing this fairly aggressively over the next several months because we think that's within our mandate and it's appropriate for our actions. There's some of your words.
Yeah, but you were concerned about whether the report was.
The reporting, about whether.
Right. Another concern is regarding information that may be provided to you, the committee, that the agencies providing it don't want the public to know. We would like at anthropolygraphs.org to request those materials under the Freedom of Information Act. And if we don't get it, you want to hold those who are denying this information to the public publicly accountable for it, as well they should be, I think.
That we can only do that if the committee will publish a list of the documents that it received without the content, but just the title, so that such an agency, so that such documents can be requested, and then it'll become a matter of law whether we get access to that information or not. But we would like to make such requests in a timely manner. So when you get your information on the secret knowledge that federal authorities use to detect attempts at countermeasures, we'd like to know that document exists and that you are relying on making your conclusions, and that we should have the opportunity to request that under the Freedom of Information Act. Must the committee accommodate?
We have an office of classification that looks at classified information, and they have rules about what is becomes public or not. I think that anything that everybody sees does, in fact, is noted someplace and posted.
So we could get a right, an inventory of
a box. But it is classified. It is not, as I understand, available on Freedom of Information.
And in fact, not all of the committee will see it, only those who
can. Right. Well, you can still request a classified document under the Freedom of Information Act. And we'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll do that because, actually, we think the claims that countermeasures is some big secret that you can't be released is a bunch of hokum. Because, I mean, telegraphy wasn't invented by the federal government, and there's lots of people practicing it who don't have security clearances. Should we assume that, say, for example, the polygraph unit at the Los Angeles Police Department doesn't know how to detect countermeasures because it's classified and this is information that only federal telegraphers have that hasn't circulated? I'm skeptical of that.
Other than you're classified, question, public question. We've been dealing with this with the Bureau of Census for the last several years. And our process is such that it's open in so many places that the Census Bureau will not give us anything for the social panels that will not then be released. We release everything that's given to us by them. And it actually hampers the work somewhat of the panels. Because they have not wanted to have preliminary release of some of their information so they have a chance to review it. And in fact, it's kept it from Congress and us. The big concern was that they gave it to us, so it became political because Congress would get it and put the side of one way or the other. It has worked. They have not given us, they've delayed giving us.
It strikes me, and I think this is not something that we're going to resolve in this discussion. Our goal is not to address what is or what is not releasable under the Freedom of Information Act.
Right.
That's somebody else's job. Our goal is to find all of the information relevant to our task, whether it is releasable or not releasable. And we have a variety of mechanisms and levels of access that we will try to pursue, and we will make available whatever information we are allowed about what we have looked at and what we haven't, and we welcome information on titles of documents if people know they exist, because we will ask for them. When we know the title, it's easier to ask, and we will, if we don't get access to things that we have asked for, we may that we may not. It depends on whether you think it's relevant. But our goal is to find all of the information that anyone deems to be relevant and then to make our own assessment of it.
Is it okay?
So I wanted to turn back to the substance.
I have a sort of policy question, I guess, with the project organization. Are you recommending that polygraph be eliminated in all aspects?
With regard to employment, not necessarily criminal intent.
interrogation.
I just wonder how far this extends in the review. But what, and let me ask you this question, what level of error, given that most tests are associated with some error, if you were to determine what that error was, what level of error would you think is tolerable for use by federal agencies who are concerned about security? Obviously, you know, the polygraph error rate is too high.
It doesn't have a definable error rate because it's not a standardized procedure. It's done differently by different telegraphers. And for example, the control questions are selected as you go along. In each polygraph interrogation, there's a unique psychodynamic that isn't reproducible. I think it's a problem to think about the polygraph test as a standardized test. It isn't. It's an interrogation using the polygraph as a prop. Unfortunately, those in government tend to see it as being much more than that. For example, retired FBI agent Steve Piper, Richard W. Piper, again, he might speak with you in Florida. At the Senate hearing the other day, claimed that if someone passes a polygraph test, you can be 99.99% sure that that person is truthful. Elder James passed two polygraph tests while he was spying for the Soviet Union and later Russia. So I don't know how you reconcile these two views, but if people who are administering the programs believe these things, well, that's where our opposition to it stems from.
But let me follow that up. Mm-hmm. One could listen to what you just said and assume that as long as they standardize the test properly and eliminated some of the deceptive practices that you object to, that would then be acceptable to these polygraphs in all these settings. And I gather that's not the view. That is, we're simply fixing up some of these problems by continuing to use the polygraph.
If there was a methodology that was reliably and with a determinable rate of validity distinguish deception from truth-telling, I think everyone would just have to get used to that.
The fact that there'd be a significant level of false alarm or error associated with the test is not your basis for objection.
It's part of the basis with the polygraph. For example, you're right. Suppose there is a truth detector or a lie detector that can be through repeatable research has been shown to determine truth from deception 60% of the time. Well, that might be better, certainly better than 50%. You might want to use it in some situations. My concern then would not be so much the methodology itself, but there would be policy considerations of too much emphasis being placed on that. That's possible. And that's something hypothetical that I haven't read, and we have as an organization, haven't focused on. We don't see the polygraph. We look for peer-reviewed research showing that lie detectors work better than sham, and we didn't find that establishing the peer review literature. The only people who seem to be making that claim are people who depend on it for making a living.
I'm going to try to keep track of people because I see lots of hands go
up. I want to follow up
that line. I would take it as a given that the government has to admit it.
I would take that as a given too.
Okay. So your objection then was, would you distinguish the way in which your objection to the polygraph as an let me take a moment with you about words for a moment.
Okay.
The polygraph may have a definable error rate, but an unverifiable one. Okay.
clearly there's a right or wrong. Polygraph can give a right or wrong answer. And if we knew it, I mean, that's a definition. We could tabulate that and have an error in it. Right? I think your objection really is unverifiable, and one may or may not agree with that. But if you go with me that far, how do your objections to polygraph differ from the objections one might bring to other aspects of security screening, such as background checks and the other more accepted means of checking, where in fact there is also no scientific literature documenting or documenting an error rate, and error rate is similarly unverifiable.
That's a good question. The problem with the polygraph as opposed to doing background checks is that it's really hard to live down a false positive sign on the polygraph. It's accorded undue weight. Let me go back a minute. I don't accept your argument. Well, not argument, but the hypothetical you posed, that maybe the polygraph is something that, that we can't know precisely what its validity is, but within certain tolerances.
Well, a polygraph, to be sure the polygraph comes out with an answer, somebody calligrapher says that,
right,
it's NDI or...
Right. And there's no evidence that that is worth any better than chance.
But if, I thought we were arguing on the ground, whether it was definable or not. Okay, and I claim it's definable. I was the person who accepted it wasn't. Did you do that?
I would argue that, yes, you can define that, and you could also do a validity study for astrological chart reading. But if what you're measuring in the first place has no relationship with what you're hoping it will diagnose, then
that's an empirical matter, not a definitional matter. That's an empirical matter. And similarly, and I don't want to let the people in here, but similarly,